Examples.
Yes, thank you very much, and I thank the organizer for such a wonderful program and atmosphere. And okay, so Ilya asked me to prepare a pedagogical talk about generalities of collective field theory, and I will do that and exemplify the general formalism on two variants of the Calogero model. It's always good to explain things through examples. And the Calogero model is well suited for this program. It's a pity that Wigman and Rabanov have already left. Anyway, so the talk is based on these recent papers. This has to do with a Calogero model that arises from normal matrices, quantum normal matrices. And this is a recent paper I've written with these two gentlemen from Zagreb about generalization of the Calogero model to a family of interacting families of Calogero particles treated in the collective field formalism. And for the record, some standard references on the collective field theory are papers by Sakita and Yevitsky, the book by Sakita. And as for Calogero models, I recommend the recent two reviews, collective field treatment of Calogero models, or the spin Calogero model. I recommend two recent reviews. One by Aniceto and Yevitsky, which was published here, and another one by Polychronakos. They were both published in a recent new issue of the Journal of Physics A, devoted to low-dimensional quantum field theory, to which Ilya was generous enough to contribute his SLE review. It's a little bit crowded here. Okay. So what is the framework? Well, in condensed matter physics, a well-known method is the density field approach. And a notable example of application of that method is the Bompine's treatment of plasma oscillations. So this is a very old subject. It dates back at least to the 50s, to the early 50s. Okay, a good idea, even if that's old, can be put to use in other contexts. So Yevitsky and Sakita, in the early 80s, they used this idea to treat quantum field theories with large N symmetry group. In such systems, it may be possible to find special variables invariant under the symmetry group, and these variables have the property that their fluctuations are tamed, and that they go away as n goes to infinity. For example, in random matrix theory, you know that the eigenvalue density behaves in this way, or in broader context, in gauge theory, the Wilson loop observable behaves in this way. So Yevitsky and Sakita said proposed to transform from the original degrees of freedom in these field theories to the symmetric ones, which don't have fluctuation in large N. So these new invariant degrees of freedom are what we call the collective variables. And they are direct analogs to the density fields in condensed matter physics. The collective field thus constructed, and I will explain to you how to do that, is an approximate asymptotic approach. And more importantly, especially in the large N context, it realizes the concept of the so-called master field, which was a term coined by Witten, to to describe the fact that we don't have fluctuations as n goes to infinity. There is only one configuration, which has to be classical. And these collective fields indeed do satisfy classical equation motion, classical equations of motion, which arise from the collective Hamiltonian, which I will construct for you.
So Witten was before Sakita?
No. Witten was more or less contemporary. He just invented that term. He coined it, master field. He called it the master field.
Historically, his large N paper was like 82 or something.
That's, you mean the nuclear physics B? Yeah, but before that he went to Karzhes in 79 and gave a big talk about...
Sakita's approach was in late 70s, I think.
Late 70s, it's more or less contemporary, yeah. So I will construct for you this collective Hamiltonian, and then I will compute quadratic fluctuations around it, and stop then. I will not discuss interactions, cubic corrections, etc., etc. Okay. So we have to transform from the original degrees of freedom, which give rise to the field theory or to the quantum many-body quantum mechanical system, to a new set of variables, the collective variables. The collective variables, as I said, are invariant under the symmetry group, be it a gauge group, UN, or the symmetry group, SN, if we are talking about identical particles. So we would... Usually, the collective operators or collective degrees of freedom form an overcomplete set. We usually end up in transforming from a system of n degrees of freedom, say n particles, to a continuum set of operators, which mutually commuting operators, and therefore this transformation is not one to one. We transform from n to a continuum, from large n to a continuum. So in order to facilitate the transformation, we have to somehow cut off the continuum into n degrees of freedom. But in the large n limit, of course, we can hope that this transformation will make sense. And you will see it does. So since we have to transform from one set of degrees of freedom to another set of degrees of freedom, let me briefly make a blitz review of the formalism of point canonical transformations in phase space. For our purpose, later on, for discussing the Calogero model and the normal matrix model, we will actually need to assume a general curved configuration space. So please bear with me. This is very elementary, but the purpose is to derive two master formulas which will be used all over the place. So please bear with me for a few minutes on these elementary things. So let's say we have a quantum mechanical system in this d-dimensional configuration space Q, with coordinates Q, metric G sub AB, Laplacian given by this formula, and we write the Hamiltonian in this way. Okay? Let's say that for some reason, and I gave you one reason just a minute ago, we want to transform from the original set of coordinates to a new set of coordinates, capital Q. And this transformation is supposed to be one-to-one and inverse, invertible. So we know how to transform the metric from the old coordinates to the new coordinates. We know how to transform the inverse metric, and we know how to transform the measure. Okay, so we have this invariance property for integration measure. And we end up with the new Hamiltonian.
So, Joshua, yes. Already here I sort of envision that there will be problems. Because here you have number of little q's and number of large q's.
It's the same. Yes.
Then you will somehow.
Yes, but in the collective field transformation, I will cut off the modes. I don't have any choice. Okay? But this is the general formalism for now. Okay, so this is, all right, I said this is a one-to-one invertible transformation. Okay, so in terms of the new coordinates, we have the Hamiltonian written in this way, with the new Laplacian, and the potential, the transform potential, and wave functions, the potential is the scalar function under this transformation, as are the wave functions, so that the matrix elements are invariant. Matrix elements are invariant under a coordinate transformation. In particular, the matrix elements of H. So let's say we prefer to work with these Q coordinates. This will be the collective coordinates later on. And note that H sub capital Q is symmetric with respect to this measure. So,
what does it mean that they are Hamiltonian symmetric?
Hermitian. Hermitian. You can put it from bra to the from the bra to the ket. Okay. And I want to get rid of this capital omega because I prefer to work with this. I prefer to swallow this Jacobian into the Hamiltonian and work with an operator which is.
Joshua, so is the statement that H sub little q
yes.
Cannot be self-adjoint?
No. It's just that it's written in a complicated way.
But they're both self-adjoint.
Yeah. Both of them are self-adjoint. Just for convenience, I prefer to work with H sub capital Q, which capital Q will be the collective coordinates later on. The little case q will be the original degrees of freedom. Okay? Are the original degrees of freedom. So. The Jacobian may be a nuisance, so as I said, I prefer to strip it off the measure and put it into the Hamiltonian, and so that the new Hamiltonian, H effective, will be symmetric with respect to the flat measure. So, obviously, what you have to do is to do this similarity transformation, and H effective is on both similarity transformation on both operator and wave function, and H effective thus obtained is symmetric with respect to this flat measure. Okay. So you can do this small calculation, similarity transformation of the Laplacian. And what you get is that this similarity transformed Laplacian is given by this by this combination. Here, these quantities C sub A or C sub B are the gradients of the log of the Jacobian, and in differential geometry they can be related to a certain combination of the Christoffel connection. Now, if I put everything back and I present a derivative in terms of momenta, of the new momenta, H effective is written in this way. And I remind you that this operator is symmetric with respect to the flat measure. Okay? Here, these little commas represent these derivatives. Now, this awkward-looking object is our first master formula. From this master formula, we will obtain the collective Hamiltonian later on. Now, I should remind you, just to put things in context, that you may be well aware of such an example. For example, in atomic physics, when you look at the radial part of the Laplacian in the dimensions, okay, you may strip. You may want to strip the which is symmetric under this measure with respect to this measure, and you may want to strip this Jacobian from the measure into the Laplacian, and you get this quantity. So this is the famous centrifugal barrier. And it's a special case of this particular formula. Okay. So, determining the quantity C sub A may be somewhat difficult to achieve directly by just using the definition. So we may seek an indirect way to do this. And this will lead us to our second and last master formula in this elementary review of coordinate transformation. So in order to obtain this second formula, we have to remember that the coordinates themselves are scalar functions. They are differentials. The differentials are differential forms. Therefore, they are zero forms. They are scalar functions. And therefore, Laplacian taken from these coordinates is also a scalar function. So let's define these quantities omega super A as the Laplacian acting on this new coordinate. Okay? Since the Laplacian is these are scalars, I apply to them the scalar Laplacian and obtain this identity. So now let's just take the second. Let's just apply the Laplacian over the new coordinate, and this is what we obtain. So putting everything on the left side, I obtain my second identity, which will be used to determine C from this term. Okay, so the presentation that I just gave you is slightly different from standard text. For example, if you look in Sakita's book, I think it's simpler and more geometrical. And also, if you look in Sakita books, you have to be careful. There are some slight typos that may confuse you a little bit. And in order to hunt them, you can look at it. There is a footnote in the paper that I mentioned earlier, which indicates exactly where. Okay. So now let's apply these ideas to the Calogero model. Okay. So this is the Hamiltonian for the Calogero model, the rational version, not the Calogero-Sutherland with a trigonometric function, just the Calogero model. And we have n particles with singular 1 over x squared interactions. And in a separate paper, in a recent paper, Bardek, Melianatz, and myself, we generalized this to F species of Calogero particles which may interact with each other. And we discussed the collective field. Here I will concentrate on the original Calogero model and make an exposé of the collective field formalism for it.
This is one-dimensional.
This is one-dimensional, yes. I will later on mention a two-dimensional version of the model. Okay. So I insist here, note that M, the mass of the particle, is an overall scale. I can just scale it away. This model is, in effect, conformally invariant. But I insist on maintaining it because later on I would like to discuss some duality symmetries which may change the scale, may change the mass. So I want to leave it in explicitly. Also note that, strictly speaking, if the interaction is repulsive, the particles will escape to infinity. So there is an implicit assumption that there is some confining potential or that we put the system on a big circle, namely the large radius limit of the Calogero-Sutherland model. But we don't need really the details of this confining mechanism. Now, since the two particle interactions are singular, boundary conditions should be imposed at incidence points. And the boundary conditions are that the many-body wave function of these n Calogero particles should vanish like x minus y to the power lambda as any two particles meet. Therefore, the many-body wave function has to contain a factor of the so-called Jastrow function, which is a van der Mond raised to the power lambda. So this is the van der Mond determinant, and it's raised to the power lambda. For this, this Jastrow function multiplies as completely symmetric factor. Because of this power lambda, these particles may have fractional statistics. When I interchange two particles, I get a phase of e to the I pi lambda. Okay?
So any eigenfunction has to have that form?
Yes, this is the boundary condition. When you define a Hamiltonian, you have to define the boundary conditions.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, because without boundary condition, the Hamiltonian makes no sense.
So there's some whole... I get always confused about this. Okay. So you can think of this Hamiltonian as being a first quantized form of some...
Yes.
Hamiltonian for quantum particles.
Yes.
Suppose they're fermions. So it's supposed to insist that wave functions be anti-symmetric with respect to condition.
Ah, so you mean lambda equals 1?
No. R2 lambda... But wave function.
But then you are defining your Hamiltonian on an ill-defined set of states. When applying the Hamiltonian to this, it will not be self-adjoint. We will not have unitary time evolution.
Why? But the Hamiltonian seems to be perfectly well defined. I have a bunch of fermions.
Well, but it has a singularity. It has a singularity, and you have to be careful. You have to. When you take two states, bra and ket, when you move the Hamiltonian from the ket to the bra, you may get boundary terms from the singularity.
But once you define that,
Well,
I mean, the way, you define it
on this space.
Eventually, if you define the self-adjoint Hamiltonian, but then you sort of, you want to look at the propagator, and that will be defined on the Fourier space.
And
look at the unitary Fourier, it will be defined on all wave functions, which are sphere integrable.
No, if these states form a complete, if these states form a complete set, and they do. I will never leave this space.
Complete in what sense?
What space?
In the space of functions. Okay, in the space of functions with this boundary condition.
That's only for your Hamiltonian. You must define the unitary coupling. You find all this in the Fourier space. It doesn't have to satisfy this condition anymore.
Yeah, but. Look, if you look at just one particle, forget about the interacting particle, just one particle with 1 over x squared potential, wave functions may not be square integrable if you don't have a correct behavior at x equals to 0.
So boundary condition for the Hamiltonian, but once you define the boundary condition,
yes.
Then you know that you can exponentiate it. Once you have the unitary, then it's defined on the full Hilbert space of all sphere integral functions. You don't need the boundary condition anymore. It's just the boundary condition is needed in order to find sort of the infinitesimal generator, and there, of course, you need the boundary condition. But the unitary.
Okay, but but an operator is unitary only where it acts unitarily only where it can be defined as a self-adjoint operator. If you don't satisfy the boundary condition, let's go back to the single particle example with 1 over x squared potential.
Yeah.
So if you... And then your Hilbert space is contained only of those wave functions. If you try to apply this, to extend this operator to a bigger space,
the operator, of course, is only defined on a certain subspace, which is defined using the boundary condition.
Yes. Exponentiate it.
Exponentiate is defined on all scale integral wave functions.
But wave functions with the wrong boundary conditions will not be square integrable.
Let's make it more concrete. Suppose okay. I want to write wave function as delta,
yes,
times absolute value of delta to the power lambda minus 1,
okay,
times the symmetric function. What's wrong with that?
Mm.
you get some contact terms like delta functions and differentiate?
Presumably, yes. Presumably. Presumably.
So you won't get an eigenstate?
No. That's my guess. I have to think about it more in more detail. But anyway, this is a kosher definition. This is a tricky question, but this is kosher. This is completely kosher. Here you will not have any problem.
I mean, you might want to think about the hardcore Boltzmann model. We have just a delta function.
You add the delta function.
Right, you add delta function. It turns out when you try to do the thermodynamics, you find that the particle is essentially a fermion, even though you thought there were bosons.
Right.
So you can either strip...
Thermodynamics, you need to treat them as fermions.
So you can either strip the power of lambda from the wave function into the Hamiltonian. That's what you are saying.
When you put absolute values, it means that you have
cusp.
Second derivative will be double.
Yeah, right.
So I think what Andrei is saying is that you can modify a Hamiltonian by adding delta function interactions.
Yes.
With some strengths.
Yes.
And then you're allowed to consider fermions or bosons.
Okay, but that's what I said. So you strip part of the refactor into the Hamiltonian. It's like doing a similarity transformation. Well, anyway, if everybody is satisfied or partly satisfied, exhausted, let me continue and I will limit myself to this sector. Anyway, okay. So I want to get something which acts only on symmetrical wave functions because the collective coordinates are symmetric variables. They are generators of all completely symmetric combinations of the coordinates. And let's do it. It's very very easy. So our Hamiltonian acts on this kind of wave functions. So we strip the Jastrow from the wave function into the Hamiltonian in this way, okay, and we obtain this H tilde, which acts on symmetric wave functions and is symmetric with respect to this measure, this Jastrow square measure, okay. Okay, so this is H tilde, and you see that we have to do this similarity transformation on the Laplacian. Now, there is a little identity concerning this combination. Okay. A little identity concerning this combination is as follows. And this can be recognized as some sort of a Laplacian acting on some curvilinear coordinates. Lambda equals 1 is recognized as a Laplacian acting on a singlet sector of the UN matrices. Okay? So for lambda equals 1, this is a well-known identity which tells you that eigenvalues of Hermitian matrices are nothing but non-interacting fermions. So this will be my delta square sub q, sub little q. This will be the Laplacian that I wish to apply to the on which I wish to apply the transformations that I mentioned earlier. Okay. So this follows a paper by Andrich, Yevitsky, and Levin from mid-80s. Okay, so what is the collective variable? The collective variable is nothing but this. Okay, so I transform from n coordinates x1 to xn to a continuum of mutually commuting operators phi of x, okay, which generate completely symmetric combinations of the coordinates. Say the moments of this field are the symmetric combinations of powers of xi. Now, these fields are overcomplete, as I said, because this we move from n coordinates to a continuum. Moreover, they are constrained. Obvious constraints are that phi is a positive operator and it's zero fermion, zero Fourier mode is not dynamical, it's constrained to be n. So, in order to facilitate an n degrees of freedom into n degrees of freedom transformation, it will be most convenient to move to the to transform to Fourier space, okay, and pick appropriate n modes, n Fourier modes for the transformation. So we do it by imposing two cutoffs, an infrared cutoff and an ultraviolet cutoff. Okay, so of course we have some maximal momentum allowed, and by putting the particles in a big box of size L, we make K discrete, so we can count exactly n modes. Okay, so we have the big box, and we have the K max. So one inverse K-max is the cutoff from distance, okay? And everything goes in between. All the interesting physics will go in between. So assume typically that our particles will condense with bulk density, some bulk density rho. This means that the condensate will occupy a length of size n over rho. And 1 over rho is the 1 over rho is the mean interparticle distance, and this is nothing but L, small L, or 1 over K max.
So,
Joshua,
can you practically implement it by saying you have big harmonic potential?
Very shallow. Either that, or just put the system on a big circle, which will do the same. So you see that from this, you see that the K max is essentially rho. And therefore, the large and limit here means large density approximation. So now I have to follow the general formalism I indicated earlier. So here is our Laplacian sub-small q. Here are our new coordinates, those capital Qs. Here is the new metric, which I will indicate by momentum indices, and you can find it by definition. You can find it to be just this. Small omega sub super A is Laplacian acting on the new coordinates, and after some tedious calculation, you see that it has this representation, and with a little thought you can write it in this way. So you have an integral representation for omega of a small omega, and I remind you that I need capital omega, small omega to determine the quantity C sub A.
Sorry. Yeah. Initially you had some quantum mechanics of
yes.
N particles.
Yes.
You transformed the variable phi of x.
Yes. And
which is the density of particles
right.
at position.
Right.
And from that, so you
from that I transform to Fourier modes. I pick the n lowest Fourier modes, and I transform from the x's to the phi sub k's. Okay?
So you omega A B is not
okay, I remind you. Omega A B, where is the choke? Omega A B is the new metric. So it should be dqa, dqm, dqb, dqn, gmn.
Okay?
And qa are now the p sub k. Okay? And gmn is just delta mn. So this is actually indicated here. So, and this is what you get. Small omega is the Laplacian acting on phi sub k, and it's a little bit technical, but that's what you get. And now I'm going to take the both infrared cutoff and ultraviolet cutoff to infinity, and therefore obtain infinite number of degrees of freedom, and therefore go to the field theory, to the continuum. Large density? It's a number of particles. You control it. You control it by confining your particles. As I said, there is an implicit confining, say, parabolic well, and by tuning the well, you can make the particle condense in a small region. Many particles in a small region. Okay, or you can put your particles on a circle.
That should be different. You have distance between particles. What should you compare it with?
Yes. So you compare it with the big box. So, well, here. Okay. So you put your. Where is it? We put our particles in a big box, okay? The particles condense in a region L sub C, which is determined by the curvature of the confining potential, and you can always arrange it that these limits will be affected. So this is.
But you're thinking of the limits. And going to infinity with finite density, and that's really what
you no,
like to get
no, I don't want the density to go to infinity, I want it to be big. So, okay? Okay, so as I said, the two cutoffs, infrared and ultraviolet, to the asymptotic region, I expect the transformation from n degrees of freedom x1 to xn to the n Fourier modes to become a transformation into genuine modes of unrestricted modes of a bona fide field, the collective field, and so in this limit, the sum over k modes become an integral, and then I can Fourier transform back to real space. It's all technical. I don't have time to discuss this. I mean, everybody knows how to do Fourier transforms. So, after some work, transformation of small omega and capital omega into x space is given by these expressions. Okay. So here you have the Hilbert transform of phi appearing, which is ubiquitous all over the place. And okay, so this is for what it was. Note that when lambda equals one, we are supposed to be at the free Fermi point, which corresponds to GUE, to quantum mechanics of Hermitian matrices. And this piece is exactly what you obtain by applying this method directly to the Hermitian matrix model. So this is an independent check.
What was the meaning of omega in the matrix model for the eigenvalue density? What does omega mean?
Which omega? Small omega or big omega?
Small.
These are the Laplacian. When you, okay, so
thanks.
So you need. Okay. So small omega is always the Laplacian acting on your collective variables. Capital omega is the new metric. Okay. So the last thing we need in order to determine the collective field is this quantity, which in the continuum limit goes to this, and we determine it from this set of equations. In our case, this divergence of the metric can be shown to be zero. This is just zero if you look here. If you take the derivative of this with respect to phi, and you get just the boundary term and this integrate to zero. And if we look at this combination, which is an integral over y of omega times c, we obtain this this combination. And therefore, when we put everything together, we have here omega of x. When we put this here, and this is zero, we obtain the equation to determine c. Okay, so it's an integral differential equation to determine c. We can make one integration trivially, okay, and with a zero integration constant because of boundary conditions. And what we find is this. And I'm sure you've seen this object floating all around in these talks by Abanov and Wigman. Again, as a simple check, lambda equals 1 give you the GUE result. And now we have all the ingredients needed to compute effective potential, effective Hamiltonian. Okay? So,
what is C prime?
C prime is just the derivative of C with respect to X, because it's easy to see. So, omega has two derivatives. So when you sum over index B, which means integrate with respect to Y, you integrate by parts. So the derivative goes from here to here. Okay, and that's how you get C prime. Sorry? You missed the definition of C. So C originally, in this context, CA is okay. Oh, thank you. Okay. So these are the gradients of the log of the determinant of the metric. And we determine them from this equation. Is that fine? And of course, in the continuum, C becomes a function of the index. A is just the index X. So okay, so let's compute H effective. The last term is interesting. Let's determine it. We have the divergence of this vector omega AB CB sum over B. Again, we determine. This combination, we determine this combination from this identity. Okay, we know what omega super A is. Okay, and if we represent everything in terms of Fourier modes, this combination here is seen to be some sort of a sum over zero modes, zero point energies with a minus sign. Okay.
Joshua, why is it variational derivative? In the X space is the same as variation
of the
K.
Although
is it easy to see?
It's not easy to see, but you can see it after some squinting your eyes. Okay, well, it's just a Parseval kind of an identity. Okay, you have to work it. Okay, and but I prefer to use this representation because it is obviously the sum of some zero modes, zero point energies of something. Okay, what is this something? This something is the quasi particles that will be generated of the vacuum. So this is a divergent sum over zero point energies with a minus sign. It's infinite. But our system, we shouldn't have this because we started with a well-defined n-body system, n-particle system, and we will see that this is indeed cancelled when we quantize the quadratic fluctuations, if we have the time to go there. Okay. In X space, this the same thing may be represented by this boundary, singular boundary terms. But it's again a technical thing. I don't want to spend time on it. Well, the other terms are more transparent, so the kinetic term is just this, and the derivatives come to the pi because omega has two derivatives and we integrate by parts, and pi is just the momentum conjugate to phi. This term, the collective potential, again, is the integral over c prime squared times phi. Again, the derivatives come because omega has two derivatives and we integrate by parts. And when we put everything together, voila, here is the effective or collective field Hamiltonian. Okay, so this is a typical form of the collective field Hamiltonian. We have a derivative of momentum operators weighted by the density. Note that it is ordered, so it's Hermitian. Everything here is Hermitian. I took special care of that by defining H effective in this way. So this is Hermitian. Here is the collective potential. It's a non-local potential, including the Hilberton's form of phi. Here is the singular part I just showed you. And of course, we have to include the Lagrange multiplier to enforce this constraint. And there is this canonical commutation relation between density and its momentum. And in the large volume limit, it's just canonical. When you keep the box finite, you have to take care of the fact that zero mode, the Fourier zero mode is not dynamical, so you have to subtract it off the delta function.
Does the potential still go like whatever distance squared?
Sorry? Phi. You mean you have to consider expectation values of the density, and indeed, it's in the ground set, it will be just flat because of Galilean invariance, but flat and with sharp ends. It will be supported on lengths of size LC. That's the condensate. It's a finite support in the ground state.
Is this supposed to be exact?
In the large density limit.
Or is it the leading order at high density?
This is the leading order in high density. In order to find the fluctuation around the ground state, you have to expand the Hamiltonian. And this is the leading order. So the answer to the question, this is the leading order. You mean of the form of the Hamiltonian, not necessarily the expectation value in some state. Yes, this is the leading order in expansion in 1 over n or 1 over rho, if you like. Because I pass from sums to integrals, so there would be Euler-Maclaurin corrections, etc., etc.
Josh, I have a more philosophical question.
Oh.
I look at the initial Hamiltonian, I could just second quantize it. And I get something. I also get...
Of course, it's exactly solvable. It's a Calogero model. You can solve it exactly. And
right.
Ilya knows a lot about the exact solution.
But what is the advantage of...
Here you can get the collective behavior almost immediately. I mean, without going through the exact solution. It's a shortcut.
You're doing it as an example, right?
This is an example for the collective, yes. For the Calogero model, yeah.
But somehow, if all you get is the leading form of the Hamiltonian at high density, I could think of doing it in a much more simple-minded way and saying that in the extreme high-density limit, the particles all have classical positions, and then I just expand the coordinates around. I just take as coordinates the displacement from the classical position. And then take some kind of continuum. I just thought that would all turn out to be quite easy.
Well, in a sense, you're right, but...
So you can think that you just have a fluid in 1D, and you write hydrodynamical action, Hamiltonian, and you quantize it. But the point is that what you would call actually the potential energy, crucially depends on the interaction in the model. It involves lambda in an essential way and a very non-trivial way. Have some graded corrections to the potential energy that are non-trivial. You cannot see them by this naive arguments. You would know how to write them down.
Okay.
So, bear with me for a few. I have about 10 minutes left because I started at half past. Yeah.
Maybe physical interpretation. Why, if I just multiply out the second term, I get the density to the third power.
Sorry, say it again.
You just take this phi of the last term in the second line.
Yeah.
If I multiply everything out, it will be a square. There's another phi.
It's cubic. Well, this cubic is not really. Yes, it's cubic, but you can make it local. You can make it local. Yeah.
Okay. Because
it has a fermionic nature, and you know that the energy of fermions is proportional to the density cube because of Pauli's principle. So it's not surprising at all.
Lambda equals one.
Yes.
It was.
I think that's part of the kinetic energy, so to speak, sitting in this potential.
Well, you mean in because of this? But the kinetic energy is, has to do with the
energy of fermions. I mean, this is translates.
Yeah.
Zero
motion. Yes. Okay. So now this Hamiltonian has an interesting symmetry. The collective Hamiltonian has an interesting symmetry, which is hard to see, if at all, when looking or staring at the original microscopic Hamiltonian. And this symmetry is a sort of a duality symmetry. And you can very easily see that if I take lambda to its inverse, m to minus m over lambda, the chemical potential to this, as far as the parameters go, and the fields, phi goes to minus lambda phi, and the momentum goes to minus momentum over lambda, and therefore preserving the canonical commutation relations, the Hamiltonian doesn't change. So we see two different systems of microscopic Hamiltonians of Kolmogorov particles give you the same collective behavior. One with weak coupling and the other one at strong coupling.
Does your mass change sign somehow?
The mass change signs. Okay, so what is the meaning?
What? What about stability then?
Okay, so what is the meaning of this sign change? This means that you not only interchange strong and weak coupling, but also particles and antiparticles. Okay? So it's just a minus sign is just a hole. It's a missing particle. Okay? And these are exact duality symmetries, and they were first discovered by Joe Minahan and Alexios Ponikonakos in the mid-90s in this system. And in the multi-family version of this Kolmogorov thing, we found a generalization. This is of these duality transformations. It's very elegant.
The original
It's not a symmetry of the. I mean, it's not easy to see that it is. It's not an obvious symmetry of the original Hamiltonian. It reveals itself only in the canonical.
In the original model, you have this lambda times lambda minus one.
Right.
So this is indirect, but lambda goes to 1 minus lambda.
No, 1 over lambda.
No.
Lambda goes to 1 minus lambda. Ah, that's what you say.
Can you see this here?
Can I see this here? In a sense... good question. I should probably, to see this, I should probably open the brackets and look at the end result. It's not obvious that you can see it from here in this way. So why did I underline exact duality? Exact duality, of course, you know what exact means. It all has to do with those terms, dx phi over phi, which appear in the action. This term is 1 over n compared to the leading term proportional to phi. Phi is an object proportional to n of order n, and this has nothing to do with n because it's the ratio of two phis. It is a subleading term, but it is crucial in order to establish those minuses. If we forget about the subleading term and look again at the effective Hamiltonian, if we just forget about this term, you see that there is a set of approximate duality symmetries which are essentially this without the minus. No minus anywhere. And these were mistaken in some papers as being exact dualities, but they are not. You can obviously see them from the Hamiltonian I just showed you. So they are just approximate dualities. Now, Heisenberg equations of motion. Collective Hamiltonians typically lead to equations of motion which are hydrodynamic in nature. It's always the case. So let me show you how this happens here. So we write the Heisenberg equations of motion. Okay? And this horribly looking quantity will play the role of enthalpy in fluid flow. Okay, so let's call it enthalpy. And now let's take the spatial derivative of the second equation and divide it by m. And we will call pi prime over m, we will call it velocity. So after these definitions and after taking this derivative and dividing by m, these two equations look exactly like equations of motion of Eulerian fluid. Yes, these are operators. These are operator equations. Okay? And as you must have heard it more than once in this program, this system lead in the Calogero case lead to a very exotic set of integrable equations, a quantum version of the Benjamin Ono equation. And in the classical version of this same thing, Javitsky had already known about this Benjamin Ono equation in the inverted oscillator Hermitian matrix model, which he studied for string theory in the mid 90s, I guess. Okay. So, and now you can study, now that you have the full operator Hamiltonian, you can study the ground state. The ground state obviously has zero momentum. And the collective Hamiltonian boils down to the collective potential. Okay. After some work, you can see that. Well, as we observed earlier, the collective potential contains quadratic and cubic terms in phi, which are non-local. So, for example, this would seemingly lead to a three-local term. But these three local terms are just an illusion. In effect, this cubic term, after you do the integrations, turns out to be completely local, and you end up with this form of the. Potential of the Hamiltonian, and you see So here is the cubic phi term, which was mentioned earlier. And you see that at least this term, coming back to Kai's question.
I think Kai's question is a simple answer.
Yeah, yeah.
Because lambda is small, you're working
on... If it's local, then...
No, this doesn't have the symmetry. That's what I'm trying to tell you. It will not have the
symmetry.
Follow the other question.
Lambda is going to 1 minus lambda. It doesn't have the symmetry. And the reason is that when lambda is small, you're working with mostly bosons, essentially bosons. When lambda is close to 1, you're working with fermions. And you cannot really convert collective fermions for bosons to collective fermions for fermions. They're different. So naively, you switch the thing in your Hamiltonian, but you also have to switch the nature of particles you're working with.
What kind of particles are you working with?
These are always anions, but when lambda is small, it's almost bosons. And lambda is close to 1, it's almost fermions.
But where do you break that?
So what breaks is essentially, you remember the delta similarity, the delta to the lambda. So that's what you're saying. Okay, so this is the effective potential. For lambda equals 1, you get purely fermion energy. For lambda equals 0, you get purely bosonic energy. If you just took a bunch of bosons and did the collective field, this is what you get. Okay, if you did just a bunch of fermions, this is what you get. You mean coming from the matrix model? No, you can see only 0 and 1. Nothing special happens at half or so. So the ground state is just the minimum of the potential, and obviously by Galilean invariance it has to be a constant, which gives you an equation to determine the chemical potential. And when you plug in back into the potential, you get the ground state energy, which goes like n cubed, and this is actually the exact answer. So the leading one over n answer is the exact one for the ground state energy. It has happened to be so. And now the leading 1 over n corrections, do we have 2, 3 minutes?
Just one minute.
1 minute, okay. So, okay, so you... linearize the nonlinear Hamiltonian around the vacuum. Okay, you add small fluctuations. You get a quadratic. The leading term is a quadratic. Okay, and it lends itself to factorization. So here is an operator, which obviously comes as one of the factors. And this would be interpreted as something that annihilates quasi-particles. This will be interpreted as something that creates them. And you can do this, play this game.
Is bosonic now? The eta is bosonic?
The collective field is bosonic always. It's bosonic, yeah. And the commutation relation between these two operators is this. And it should remind you the singular piece of the operator. And the total collective Hamiltonian for quadratic fluctuation is just this. And these two terms, the zero-point energies of the quasi-particles, just cancel the singular term that had been there originally. You can go to Fourier modes. You can find, since this is a quadratic approximation, you can find the Gaussian ground state wave function. You can calculate correlators in this ground state. And my last transparency here is that so for what it was, the 2-point correlator asymptotically can be the 2-point correlator in this theory can be expressed in terms of transcendental functions in closed form. Okay, so this is the 2-point function. Oh, this should be x minus y. In terms of integral sine and integral cosine. And so for what it was, you can do the asymptotic expansion and find the long distance behavior for the 2-point correlator. And it is just this is the answer for the long distance behavior, and doesn't depend on the density, it depends only on lambda. Okay? Okay, and since this was my scheme to put this last transparency with the new reference, so in this reference, my colleagues and I analyzed this generalization of the Calogero model into two families or multifamilies which interact among each other, and we formulated the collective field theory, studied its symmetries, diagonalized the Hamiltonian, etc. So I didn't get to tell you about higher dimensional Calogero, but there will be other programs, other. So thank you very much.
Maybe we have time for a few questions, perhaps one, two.
Yes.
How does this relate to the Dyson Darwinian motion model?
You might say that. You might say that the Hamiltonian, the Schrödinger operator I started with, would be the Fokker-Planck Hamiltonian generated by these random walks. Okay, so you have a Langevin process. You obtain from that Langevin process, you obtain a Fokker-Planck equation for the probability distribution that would be more or less the original Hamiltonian I started with. For lambda equals 1 or 2 or whatever.
Is the right thing that what you were describing is the generalization of what Dyson did?
Well, I just showed you how to solve. I didn't invent the Calogero model, otherwise it would be called by another name. But so Calogero, I don't know who generalized who, because Calogero was early 70s, and this is more or less also early 70s, so. I wouldn't say generalized, but they are intimately connected. And you.
I mean, Dyson had a treatment in terms of something like vector variables.
The collective. It's the same. And I should mention, as you raised this point, in the early 90s, people talked about matrix models in connection with quantum gravity, and. A certain set of models didn't have time dependence, just matrices in matrix integrals, and there it was important to study the density of eigenvalues of the matrix integral, and in some models the matrix integral didn't exist. It just was an integral over e to the minus x to the 4, something like that. So Parisi et al. Invented some method of stabilization, which is essentially a Fokker-Planck, whose naive ground state would be this unnormalized wave function e to the x to the 4. And when you look at Parisi's method is essentially a stochastic quantization, or just a Langevin, which leads to a Fokker-Planck, and the stationary, the ground state should give you the matrix, the matrix partition function, which does whatever you want it to do, and once you add dynamics to these integrals, you end up with this Fokker-Planck Hamiltonian, and again you can use the usual machinery. So that was very useful in that sense, and it's very similar to Dyson's random walk.
Actually, in the mid 90s, there was a Japanese group, Shiraishi, Matsuo, Avata. They considered a generalized matrix model with generic lambda. Actually, the eigenvalue integral for this matrix.
Uh-huh.
And they wrote the effective Hamiltonian.
And it was Calogero?
Basically, your Hamiltonian. But
you mean the Calogero model?
Yes, the Calogero model and in relation with this
collective field
matrix, generalized matrix model. So their Hamiltonian was essentially your Hamiltonian here, but they wrote it in terms of oscillators. They expanded the wave function.
Essentially, what Calogero did when he solved the Calogero model.
Yeah. So after that, they represented this as. The wave function of the vacuum as a solution of the Saussure constraints,
uh-huh.
We generalized and a stress-energy tensor with central charge, which is not one but smaller than one.
Mm-hmm.
Lambda with this parameter.
I see that the shifted the yes, and this is the alpha parameter which appears in
also
big man.
Duality, but I don't know who was the first who. Minahan and Polyhronakos?
I know about Minahan and Polyhronakos, but that's what I know. It may be, maybe you should look in their paper to see if they cite anybody else. But as far as I know, it was them for the first time in the mid-90s.
And also in Saclay, people, Vincent Pasquet, Lindemar,
yes?
Didinos, everyone worked on that, but I'm not... So, well,
no, but maybe we should ask her. I would like to know. Okay, thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you. Thank you.